My name is Brian. I'm an alcoholic. So I guess I have to try to sound a little coherent today because you just set the expectations a little higher than I would have liked. But thanks for that nice introduction. My sobriety date is September 21st, 2006. I have a sponsor, and so on. My home group is Common Solution Meeting, 7:30 Thursday nights in Charlottesville, Hinton Avenue. So love to see you all there. But I guess I'll get to my story. I'll start kind of from the very beginning. I was born and I grew up in Connecticut until I went away to college. Just kind of give a little background information, so in case I jump from one place to another, you'll kind of understand the chronology of the whole thing. So I grew up in Connecticut, went to high school there, then I went to school in Boston. I went to college in Boston, and then I was a 5-year school in the fourth year. I actually spent a year in Germany, and then I came back, and then after I graduated, I moved down to Charlottesville in 2006. So, where I grew up and in the family I grew up in is about as average as you could possibly imagine. It was, you know, a mom, a dad, I had one sibling, a sister. We lived in a 1,500 square foot house on a half acre plot of land, and it was just in a, you know, town of about 40,000, and dog, cat, all that stuff. And our neighbors had a white picket fence, so So I grew up in a pretty normal childhood. Everything was for the most part was pretty normal until I got to until about middle school, when now I think it was kind of almost untreated alcoholism, but I was just a little strange, a little weird, a little wacky. I was kind of out there. And I got kind of singled out amongst my friends, well, not amongst my friends, but amongst a bunch of people that I kind of that I waited at a bus stop with, and they picked on me and stuff like that. And you know, that's pretty much how middle school started out and how it lasted the whole time. And I would get picked on so bad I'd get chased home after school on the bus and everything. I mean, just stuff like that, hold me down, spit in my face and stuff like that. So I really, from the beginning, had a very strong feeling of I don't fit in, I don't belong. I tried to isolate as much as possible. I would go a whole day without saying one word because I just didn't want to draw attention to myself, because I figured if I drew attention to myself, I'd get picked on or made fun of or something like that. So that's kind of what happened through middle school. And I figured that now that I'm going to high school, I'm going to, you know, a different school. It's kind of where the two schools feed into this one bigger high school, and the class would be separated from, you know, in middle school, everybody's just kind of whatever class you went into, but then in high school, separated by, you know, whatever academic level you were at. And I knew I was higher than most of the people that were picking on me and making fun of me, so I knew that this was going to be a very good chance for me to create a new beginning where I could meet new people, where they weren't going to know who I was, what I was about, all these things that I was just ashamed, you know, embarrassed and mortified about, and I could have a new start, and you know, I could really shape the way that people were going to see me, and I could really manipulate the way that people look at me and see me as this great, you know, really cool guy. And so I tried to fit in different places. I joined different sports teams. I remember my older sister was a distance runner, and she ran cross country, and she was really good at it, and my parents wanted me to do that, and so I didn't want to do that at all. So I did it, but I did it as poorly as possible, just to kind of throw it in their face that I'm not going to do whatever it is you tell me. But then, I still wanted to do a sport, so I joined the track team, and I did the farthest thing from distance running. I did pole vaulting, and it's funny now that I think back about it. It was almost like I was looking for that kind of solution that was almost like AA, because I saw these older guys that were doing it. They were cool. All the girls wanted them. All the guys respected them, and they had what I wanted, and I was willing to go to any length to, you know, do what they do to get what they got. And that's eventually what did happen. But you know, and so I made some new friends in the first year or so, and all I can think about the whole time is what is going to happen if they find out that I used to get picked on, beat up, made fun of, and all these things, and I was a loser in middle school. And that just really kind of dominated my life. I lived my whole, you know, all day, every day, just worrying about what is going to happen if they find out who I really am. And then I first had my first, you know, real drink or real drunk. I think I'd had a couple sips of beer, you know, way earlier in life, but nothing too serious. But when I was a sophomore in high school, when I was about 15, and it was one of those things where, you know, I got drunk the first time I drank. I was just gonna have a couple and see what it felt like to see if I could get drunk. But the thing is all I'd ever heard about, all I ever really knew about drinking is what I heard from my parents, well, from my dad and from my uncle. So I thought you had to have at least, you know, because the way they would talk about it, you know, you had to have at least, oh, I gotta have at least 12 beers and like 13 shots to feel anything. Just, you know, because they're just being macho tough guys talking about, you know, about how much they think they could drink. So remember, I had two or three beers and I was just like, what is this feeling? This is great. This is amazing. I was like, I was like, asking my friends, I was like, what is this? This is awesome. And that's probably, if you were to ask me before I started drinking, that's the point that I wanted to get to, and just to see what it was like to have fun, to be able to go back to school and tell my friends, I got drunk, I drank alcohol, look at me, I'm cool, I'm a tough guy. But then it didn't stop at that. Then we, you know, by the end of the night, we were going up to, because there was a bunch of us at my friend's house, and we were going up to his refrigerator and stealing some of the, they had one of those wine in a box things, and we were taking wine out of that. So that's how my drinking started from the very start. So that kind of shows that from probably about the first time I really got drunk, kind of the phenomenon of craving, where I was just like, okay, I'm just going to get to the point where I'm feeling good, feeling like I'm cool, like I'm in control, and I just could not stop. And then to kind of tell you what alcohol did for me, I remember one time, you know, that same year, we were hanging out at the... we're gonna go to the bowling alley and hang out. I think it was on a Friday night, and I was like, this is a good idea because I really like bowling. Because in middle school, it wasn't cool to go bowling, so I used to go bowling all the time because I knew I wouldn't run into the cool people there, and because I was scared to death of running into those people, and so I was really good at it and I really enjoyed it. But you know, we got there and there was a, I don't know, it was a Friday or Saturday night, and there was a line out the door of people waiting to get, you know, to get a lane, and it was all the cool people from middle school that picked on me and made fun of me and stuff, and I was mortified. I was like, oh my God, my new friends are gonna, now they're gonna really find out what I'm, you know, what I was like, and I was just completely terrified that they were gonna find out who I really was. But, so I went and I stayed in the car. I kind of just hid there because one of our friends was older and he had his license, and we were, I just was, I don't know what I said or what I did, but I was just like, oh, I'm just going to hang out in the car and hopefully that they get a lane somewhere on the other side of the bowling alley and I would get a lane somewhere else and they wouldn't find out. But then one of our other friends stopped by and he had some beer. And I took, you know, I started drinking a couple beers, and by the end of the second or third one, I remember, I took, you know, I opened up, took the can of beer, walked over to where it was lined up outside, and I was just going up to these people, and just talking to them, just be like, hey, what's going on, you know, what's happened, whatever, just because it's just like, because I had it in my head what alcohol did for me. It gave me this perception change from being a scared, you know, little boy hiding in this truck to, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to say? I'm crazy. There's nothing, you know. But anyhow, so that's the perception change that alcohol gave me. So needless to say, that was, you know, something that I really like doing. And there's just so many different examples of where it just gave me that sense of fearlessness, of I wasn't worried about what other people were thinking of me, where I had this just, you know, this ultimate self-confidence about myself. And especially with hanging out with guys on the track team, and I'd get drunk, and these were guys who I looked up to, and I was scared of, and then I'd get drunk, and I would just, you know, tell them how pathetic they were, because I mean, it just gave me that much of a perception change where I didn't care about anything. And so throughout high school, I stayed really involved in track and field and pole vaulting. I didn't really have that many consequences, and you know, as I said before, I was willing to go to pretty much any length to, you know, to be like those guys, the older guys on the team, and be good and at you know, at pole vaulting. So I actually became really good, and I won state championship a couple times. And the last time I won it, my senior year, it was the third time I'd won a state open championship. And but I didn't do very well. I jumped about a foot lower than I normally jump. And this guy from the newspaper came up to me and he said, "Hey, you know," he's like, "Oh, you just won again. You just won the third time. You know, how do you feel?" And which is a great question for an alcoholic. How do you feel? And I told him the truth. And I told him the truth. I was like, "I feel terrible. I feel miserable. I feel embarrassed. This is, I just want to, you know, go away and hide. I can't believe I did this terrible," and so on and so forth. And he just starts laughing because he thought it was so ridiculous. He thought I was telling a joke. But I just told you that story to you know, to show you how I tried to find other solutions other than alcohol to make me feel better. And you know, it wasn't to build up my ego. And but how can you tell when an alcoholic is lying? His lips are moving. So, and then I went away to college. You know, and when I was going away to college, because by that time I'd gotten a, you know, I didn't have many consequences for my drinking, but a lot of people started to think I was a little bit, you know, a little bit crazy, a little bit nuts, because when I would drink, I would never have just a couple beers or hang out and party, whatever. I would just go to the absolute drink, to absolute oblivion, and do, you know, wild and crazy things and, you know, all sorts of stuff. So it was the heat was starting to get on, and people were starting to want to hang out with me less because they thought I was a little too crazy. And so then I was going away to college in a different state, and I figured, okay, well, this is going to be a perfect opportunity because none of these people are going to know me, where I can have a fresh start, where people are not going to think I'm crazy. They're going to think I'm a normal, cool guy, and I can, you know, kind of start a new life and be able to manipulate, control, and kind of build an image of what people are going to think about me. And, you know, it's the same story. I tried to, you know, try to hang out with people and you know, drink and make friends and not get too out of control. Just get drunk and have a good time, you know, meet some girls, do whatever. But it just never seemed to work, because once I started drinking, I just could not stop. And, you know, I was starting, at this point in my drinking, I was starting to black out more. I remember, you know, some embarrassing conversations with people, you know, the next day that I had no idea who they were. I just remember being in the cafeteria one time, getting a drink or something after, you know, I'd been really drunk the night before, and this person's like, "So, how's it going?" I'm like, "Who are you?" I was like, "What's going on?" They're like, "Oh, don't worry about it. You were just talking to me last night, and your pants were on backwards." I was like, "Okay, if you say so." But anyhow, so then I went and, you know, I went back that summer, went back to Connecticut for my big, you know, for summer break. And the one thing that the longer I stay in AA, the longer in hindsight I can kind of see how my drinking, the difference between my drinking and what a heavy drinker, the way a heavy drinker drank, it becomes way more apparent. Because I hung out with a lot of people who, you know, who drank a lot, who liked to get drunk and, you know, have a good time and do stuff, but it was just a little bit different. It was just that it's just like Bob Darrell says, it's like they would start drinking and they would get right to the edge of the cliff and they would stop. And when I drank, I started drinking, I wouldn't even realize there was an edge of the cliff there until I was falling down, looking back up at it. So that summer, one of my friends, you know, he knew somebody who we could go to this bar and drink, you know, and nobody would card us because we were underage. And you know, I remember this friend of ours, he was talking to us, a bunch of us, and he was saying, you know, "Who wants to go to this bar?" It was in the town over, and it was a weekday night, and I think it was getting close to 10 o'clock, and some other people were, were like, oh, I don't know, I've got to get up, you know, tomorrow. It's a weekday night, and you know, blah blah blah. And he was coming around, and I was just like, let's go right now. And so we went, and you know, and I remember at the, I don't know when it was, but I just remember telling him, saying, you know, whenever you want to go to this bar and you need somebody to go with you any time, day or night, it does not ever hurt to at least call me and ask. Make sure you at least call me, because I will be there. So, and the thing was, is it was kind of like a biker bar, and it was just a, you know, a very similar situation to like when I was in middle school. I remember just, these were people who, when I was not sober, I would be scared to death of. I mean, as skinny as I am now, I was probably about 30 pounds less, about the same height, and I was just, you know, I was just scared of everything and of everybody. And we would go in that bar, and I would have a couple drinks, and I would feel like I belonged in, you know, around a bunch of bikers who were these, you know, tough guys. And I remember, because my friend was in the Marines, and this one guy, he had his, because my friend, he would always wear one of his Marine Corps t-shirts out, and so this older guy came over, and he looks at my friend, and, you know, he says, oh, you're in the Corps, blah, 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 you know, they're talking, and then he looks at me, and he goes, is he? And he's just like, no, and the guy puts me in a headlock, why not, and I'm just like, I just started laughing, I thought it was funny. I mean, if I wasn't drunk, I would have cried. But anyhow, so then, you know, after about two more years of school up in Boston, it was when, because I studied international business, I had to go overseas for a year to Germany. And by this time, the people that I hung out with in Boston were starting to get the idea that I got a little crazy when I drank. I would start drinking, wouldn't stop, would just drink to oblivion, couldn't just hang out and socially have a good time. I had to get out of control. So the heat was on a little bit with those people, so this was perfect because I needed a break for them so they forget about that stuff. So when I came back, I could be cool again. But so when I was going away to Germany, I thought, okay, this is a great opportunity because I'm going to meet people there that I do not know, that don't know anything about me, what I was like, how whacked out I am, and now this is going to be a perfect opportunity where I can kind of build and manipulate, you know, what these people are going to think of me, and I can kind of have a fresh start, just like so many other times. And just like so many other times, it failed again. And, you know, because as it is with us alcoholics, it always gets worse, never better. And when I was living in Germany, that's when I discovered how awesome drinking by myself was, that I could drink and I didn't have to hear about anybody's opinion of, you know, oh, you drink too much, oh, you're getting out of control, and the best thing was I didn't have to hear from people the next day about what I did, or, you know, just kind of that horrible look in people's face when you've gotten so drunk, you've done something so bad, and they just give you that kind of, that just shameful look, and it's, you don't even know what it was that you did. And just having those conversations where it's like, okay, I know I blacked out last night, this person may have been involved, so I got to figure out from this person, I got to ask them certain kind of questions to kind of figure out what it is I did, how bad it was, that whatever it was that I did. But I've got to do all this without them figuring out that, knowing that I know I blacked out, and I'm trying to piece this together. So, you know, but anyhow, so I was after a semester of class, I was supposed to get an internship and go move somewhere else in the country, in Germany, and work this internship for a couple months. And I kind of just didn't get an internship. I kind of didn't really look. I kind of just drank, and it came to a point where where they kind of let me start paid month by month where I live, but then after that they found somebody who could pay for 6 months or something like that. So they came in on a Thursday or a Friday and told me, okay, you've got to be out of here by Tuesday. I'm like, Tuesday in like a couple of days? Like, yeah. I was like, oh God. So I'm in a foreign country, I have no job, I have no place to live. And so what do? I go out and I get, you know, my keen alcoholic mind is like, okay, what I'm going to do? I'm going to get drunk and I'm going to figure this out. So I got drunk. I put all my stuff in garbage bags and moved that stuff in some closet. stayed with a friend for a little while, and I kind of moved into this kind of, and it was like a boarding house kind of thing. It was like a hotel. It was a hotel. I was living in a hotel for a couple months. And the funny thing was, is when I would think about that, is that just that the alcoholic ego and pride, I wanted so badly to, because I came to my advisor and said, you know, I don't have a place to live, what am I going to do? And she found me this place to live at the last minute, and I was a little disappointed because I wanted to not have a place to live so I could brag to everybody how I was homeless in a foreign country, and look how tough I am. But that, you know, fortunately didn't work out. So lived there, finally got a job, and it's just so funny looking back at it now how I could not see where my drinking had taken me. And I would, at work functions I would get drunk and embarrass myself, and I'd have to have those conversations with, blackout kind of conversations with people at work the next day at work, and that was just a dreadful feeling. I was falling apart at work. I remember the internship only lasted 4 months. But I think if it lasted any longer than that, I would have been fired, because I remember my boss pulled me into this room, and it's just like, what's the matter? It's like you hate your job. And I'm like, yeah, wow, good job. You figured that one out. So I kind of just hung on there, and I remember just the feeling of, embarrassment when we had to go over and do the review at the end of the job, where they're filling out this piece of paper saying, what kind of job they did, and says this. We come to the part where it says, is this person, would they be eligible to be rehired here if there ever arose another opportunity? She's like, and my boss is just like, we're just going to leave that blank. So, one of the things that I would always do, and it's just so funny to me, looking back now, is I would be late for everything except for the train, because the train, there was a bar in the train station, and I would always show up there 2 or 3 hours early, and there was no kind of open container law, so I'd sit and I'd drink in the train station bar, and then I'd bring some with me to the platform and stuff like that. And it's just so funny, because where I'd end up drinking, the way I like to drink is I would go to the train station bar where I would be the youngest person at the bar probably by about at least 30 years. And I would sit there, and it was pretty obvious that I was American. And so I would know that nobody would talk to me, because I was so much younger, and I was so much different, and there was no reason for them to talk to me. So I could sit there and I could drink the way I wanted to drink, because I didn't care about, talking to people or being social or anything. I just liked the effect that was produced by alcohol, and I could get on that train and not have to, worry about, my mind could be kind of turned off, not having to think about, this kid screaming, these people up and down, oh my God, what happens if I read, how embarrassing is it going to be if I read this thing, my seat assignment wrong in German, and then they come and they start yelling at me, you're sitting in the wrong place, I'm going to be so mortified. I could just sit there and just, somebody comes up to me and says anything, I don't care, whatever, I'll just take it as it comes. And then so by the end of that, I came back to the United States, and again, I was just like, okay, it's been enough time where I can, where they've hopefully forgotten about all the way I was when I drank, and, all the consequence, all those sort of things. And I could once again create a new image to people, where to manipulate the way that they saw me and how I would look to everybody. And this is going to be a new chance. And once again, one more attempt and one more failure. And now it was getting even worse, where to the point my drinking was bad, but then I started to get consequences, and they started showing up. And, I went to the doctor and, did some blood work, and I guess my liver something or other was not good or something. You can tell that I like to drink a lot, but that didn't stop me at all. And then I got in even bigger trouble. And when I did get in bigger trouble, I was like, okay, this is good, because it's going to give me sufficient reason to quit. I know that if I have a good enough reason to quit, I can quit. And I quit for a couple weeks, and I knew that the repercussions could be extremely bad if I got caught, you know, messing up again. And within, I think it was that 2 or 3 weeks, I was driving a friend's car home in a blackout. And I mean, because that's what consequences and self-knowledge of I can't stop drinking, you know, did for me. And now it's just to, you know, kind of sum up my whole entire drinking, it was just like, it was just that there was just that certain powerlessness that I had over alcohol that even the heavy drinkers have. Like, they could go, and my friends would go get beer early in the morning, and they would put it in the fridge to let it cool off, and then as soon as it got cold, then we'd drink it. I couldn't do that. I could not wait. I had to drink it right when we got it. Another example, we went to a beach house one time, and a bunch of us were hanging out, and one of my friends, out of anybody in the party, comes up to me and says, "Hey, tomorrow morning we're going to start off the day and we're going to have a beer." I was like, "Oh yeah, we'll do that." And then when he drank it, this guy was obviously a heavy drinker. He, you know, this is a person I literally saw. He spilled a drink on the floor one time and licked it off the floor. So this guy is not, you know, somebody who's just a casual drinker. And when we had that drink, it did something for me that, you know, the next morning, it did something for me that it absolutely did not do for him. Because when he took that first swig, he's kind of like, ugh, and then he said, ugh, and then he kind of slowly drank it. I got that one sip to stay down. And then after that, I could get to where I could kind of chug it, and I could just feel that. Because when you wake up and you have that, you know, that kind of half-drunk hangover, you could feel all the kind of the you know, the four horsemen, the fear, bewilderment, terror, and all that kind of stuff coming up. And then that kind of stops it and then just flips the switch back. And that was just the greatest feeling. I just felt a complete sigh of relief. And after I finished that one, I was ready to, as this one guy says, I was ready to rock the nation. And, I mean, I ended up in a different state because you couldn't buy beer in that state that we were in on a Sunday. And it was Sunday. And we ended up going to, you know, a different state to try to get more beer. And the other guy, after he finished, he's like, "Thank God that's over." And so that's just, you know, what alcohol does for me that it just doesn't do for other people. And then, as you know, after I graduated from college, I once again thought it'd be a good idea to move somewhere else where nobody knew me, where I could start this new kind of image of myself, and just what people, you know, would be thinking about me. I could manipulate that. So I moved down to Charlottesville because it's so funny because you know, I have to answer this question so many times, you know, to people at work and people, you know, when on job interviews, like, "So what brings you to Charlottesville?" And I have to come up with some cheesy explanation of, you know, "Oh, the weather is so much nicer, and, you know, in Connecticut it's so cold and all this." And then I find myself, when people in AA ask me, "So why'd you, you know, what brought you to Charlottesville?" And I give them that, and I stop and go, wait a second. But you know, the heat was on, and I had to get out of there because. And so, you know, I guess I'm technically still on my geographic. So, I mean, don't knock until you try it, I guess. But anyhow, so I came down here, and once again, and my girlfriend was still back living in Massachusetts, and you know, the pain and suffering that it caused her, because I would lie constantly. I would never tell the truth. I got to the point where what I would do is, because I knew at you know, I was living down here and she was up there, that she was going to call me at some point and try to find out if I was drinking. So what I would do is, after I had after I had 3 or 4, I would call her up and say, "Oh man, you'd be so proud of me. I haven't drank at all. You know, I'm doing good and blah 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 and all that kind of stuff." And you come to find out later that she still kind of knew. But anyhow, so, and then, you know, I had, and then when she moved down here, and you know, the heat was really on because my parents were fed up with me, my girlfriend was fed up with me. She told me she was gonna, you know, if I didn't stop drinking, that she was gonna leave. So I thought, well, this is a good idea. I'll just go to an AA meeting. And so I went to an AA meeting, and well, I kind of left out a little bit of, you know, I had gone to back when I was, just before I left, I'd gone to a counselor, and they said, you know, they gave me the 20 questions thing to see, you know, if you're an alcoholic, if you answer yes to 2 of these, you're an alcoholic, or 3 of these, you're definitely an alcoholic. And I answered yes to 16 of them, and that's only because I lied on the other 4. And But anyhow, so, and I remember the last thing that she said to me was, your dad's drunk, your mom's a pill popper, your sister is distant or something like that, and so you need to go to all these kinds of therapy and get this worked out. And I remember just thinking to myself, you know what? I've already tried blaming it on everybody else before, and it's not that I had all this, you know, I finally woke up with a conscience or something. It's just I knew that didn't work because it obviously had not worked. So I was just like, thanks, see you later. I went to an AA meeting to get the heat off, and as it was before I came back around to AA and was willing to listen, I just sat there and tried to identify out, and I would go to a couple of meetings, AA meetings down here, here and there, and wouldn't listen to anything anybody told me. I was just basically there to get the heat off. Just my big thing was just I was going to go to AA, stop drinking for about 30 days, and then be able to prove to my girlfriend that, okay, I've got this thing under control, I can start drinking again. But that's not what she had in mind at all. But so then I don't know what happened, but I went down to this business conference thing with my boss, and I was like, okay, I'm really gonna keep this under control. I'm not gonna get all that drunk. I'm just gonna do whatever. And that didn't happen. I got blacked out and stuff, and really. And then last night I was there, I remember. The last day I was there, I was feeling so hungover, and I went to the bar by myself, because at this point I was like, I felt just so terrible, and I didn't care that my boss was going to see me sitting at the bar drinking by myself in the middle of the day when I was supposed to be at this conference thing. So I was drinking, and for some reason the switch just wouldn't flip. I would drink more, and my mind would just keep going, and it just seemed like what everybody said, like it just stopped working. And then I came back, and I looked like a mess, and so the heat was on again at home, and I was like, all right, fine, I'll go to a couple meetings, a week, and so my plan was I'm going to go to a couple meetings a week, and then I'm going to try to get this all under control, on my own and everything, because, that was, my plan. And I stayed sober for about 70 days, and my biggest thing was that once I get sober, once I stop drinking for about, for a little while, long enough where I can kind of start paying my dad back the money I owed, and paying back some other people money I owed, my life would be so much better, because then I wouldn't feel like I owed anybody anything, and I'd be free of, all this guilt, remorse, and all this other stuff, and nobody could tell me what to do because they didn't owe them anything. And by the time I was about 70 days sober, I had paid some of the money back. I put a decent enough down payment where they knew I wasn't joking. And, I hadn't had a drink, and I was just completely miserable. I couldn't drive to work, the 2 miles to work without losing my voice from screaming so loud at somebody who didn't put their blinker on or something like that. And, and I remember once again at the job that I had having a conversation with my boss and him saying, what's going on with you? What's happening? This is not really working out like we thought it was. And then so the heat was on enough that I was like, okay, I'm willing to do things that I wasn't willing to do before. And I was willing to ask this guy to sponsor me. And, it was a guy that I heard in meetings before. And I knew he sounded really good. He sounded very articulate, and I remember he shared something. He shared the same thing 2 times in a row, and from 1 week to the next at the same meeting. So I was like, this guy's articulate. He shares the same thing. This guy's got to be full of crap. And so, but I knew he was kind of full of crap the same way I was. So it was something that I could identify with. And I ran into a strong home group, and because. When I was first coming around to AA, a lot of people, and I was first trying to get sober, people would ask me, how are you doing? How are you doing? I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa! I'm getting as far away from this conversation as possible. What do you want to know about? What's going on here? What are you trying to get out of this or anything? And I just didn't, how are you doing is the last thing I wanted to talk about or discuss. But then these other people would come up to me and they would talk to me. They wouldn't ask me about how I was doing or ask me about all these other things or what are you doing or this, that, and the other thing. They would tell me about stuff that they did. And, I remember this one guy, he tried to come up to me and talk to me, and I didn't want to talk to anybody or couldn't look anybody in the eye. And he's just going on and he's talking, and then all of a sudden he's just like, you know, I was hunting the other day and I almost fell out of my tree stand, and, you know, I fell asleep and I just started laughing, and I thought it was funny because now it's like finally we're talking about something else other than me. And then he, you know, him and these other guys, they would talk about, you know, how they drank and the things that they did when they drank, and you know how two beers on the golf course would turn into punching out a windshield in the blackout at 2 a.m. because that's what I needed to hear. Because when I first came here, I thought, you know, going to AA and being an alcoholic just was based solely upon the amount of alcohol you drank, the quantity you drank or whatever, and I thought maybe mine was more or less, I was crazy, too crazy, not crazy enough, or I couldn't, my biggest struggle was, am I crazy because I drank so much, or am I crazy because I drink so much, or did I become crazy because I drink so much? And that's not what it, you know, the message that I got from these guys was, you know, they drank like I drank, and they did the same things I did, and they felt the same way I felt when they weren't drinking. And that they seemed to have the one thing that I wanted, which was to be able to be comfortable in their own skin without a drink of alcohol. And so, you know, I was willing to do what they did, because all these people were talking about doing the same thing, which was going to committed meetings, doing the steps, and trying to carry the message to other alcoholics. And that, you know, and that we didn't have to do this perfectly, because I remember one of the things I was balking at about getting a sponsor was, you know, I don't think I can do this thing, you know, perfectly. I can't do it up to the, you know, expectations. I might drink again. I'd be such a failure, blah, blah, blah. And this one guy who I thought was the AA police came up to me and said, you know, nobody's able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. You know, we're not going to sick the dogs on you if you drink again. And I was just like, okay, well, maybe I'll give it a shot. And so I met with my sponsor, and we would meet before the meeting, before meetings, you know, 45 minutes, an hour before the meetings, because he'd asked me to, you know, start going to 5 committed meetings a week, get there early, get a job in my home group. And it's funny because I hear people talk about, you know, I did those things and I didn't want to do them. I was happy to hear somebody actually, because that was the first time in a long time somebody had actually asked me to do something and, like, gave me some kind of trust, like I was actually going to do it. But so then we'd meet before the meeting, we'd go through the book, we'd read through, you know, different things, and the only real thing I can remember about the first 2 steps was that when we read through Bill's story, it talks about Bill, there's some point where Bill's slapping on the bar trying to get another drink, and I was like, that's me, that's how I drink. I'm not just this guy who drinks a lot. That's how I feel when I want to drink. So we did that, and then he starts talking about, you know, doing an inventory. And I was like, wait a second, that's the 4th step. I know that. We just finished step 2, and so I'm the kind of person that I like to be able to prove I did something. I want to be able to tell other people I did it, so I wanted to be able to go to a meeting and share that, you know, I did the 3rd step. You know, look how far I am in AA. So I was like, well, what are we going to do about the 3rd step? He's like, you'll know you've done the 3rd step when you start running your inventory, and just say this prayer before you start running your inventory. So I did, you know, I started doing my inventory, and I was just like, this is the one, because this is what, you know, people who seem hardcore in AA, they talk about doing this. And so I know if I do this and I can share about this, I will measure up in AA. And so I did it, and I was just like, okay, well, here's the stuff I'm willing to write down. Here's the other stuff I'm not willing to write down. It was about 70-30. 30% I wasn't willing to say. The other 70 I was. So I was figuring, well, this is going to make my life 70% better when I go to the 5th step and cough up this stuff. So I coughed up the 70% of the stuff, and it made it worse, because then it just took away all that 70% was out of my head, and all that was left was that 30%. And all I could think about was, what is going to happen if somebody finds out? Does this person already know? If this person knows, are they going to tell that person? What's going to happen when this person finds out? Is this going to get back to so-and-so? And all these different things. So it was just that, you know, that crazy alcoholic thinking. I could not shut my mind off. And it came to the point where it's just like, the only thing that's going to, you know, I only have two possible options here. You know, either cough this stuff up, or, you know, or drink again, because that was the only thing that was going to cure what was going on in my head. So, luckily, I went back and told my sponsor things I didn't want to tell him, and I eventually ended up making amends for some of that stuff. So, and that was, when it talks about riding down the broad spiritual highway or whatever, I remember after I said that, and I, like a lot of people said, they don't want to identify with that, but I really identify with that, because I remember I was coming down 29 after I'd explained this thing to my sponsor, and I kind of explained it to somebody else too after this, and this was the person, it was like making amends, because I admitted this person was mad. It wasn't like, we think it's going to go better than we thought, but it went way worse, and it was bad news, and I was at perfect ease with with what was going on, because this person had already known anyway, and it just came to where I admitted it, and now I can look myself in the mirror. And so then we went through, and the kind of 6 and 7, well, the good part about 6 and 7 is after I did that first 70% fifth step, it asks you so many times, did you leave anything out? And it's just like, yes, 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 yes. And then it's just like, oh God. Then I developed all sorts of resentment against people in AA who would come and share about how they lied in their first fifth step, and it drove them nuts. I'm like, oh God, I got to get away with this, man. But anyhow, so then I went back and, I remember I made some amends, and some of them I didn't think they were tough enough to make, so I didn't get, and I was like, I had this really cool experience with the fifth step, what am I going to get when I do this ninth step? But, my expectations, I was let down, but then as I kept on going through and making amends and continuing to work the steps, my life got better, and I was able to handle a lot of different situations that when I was drinking or didn't, if I didn't have AA, I don't know how I would have handled. One of the things that I do the worst is be unemployed. Like I was saying, like in Germany, when I was drinking, I was unemployed. I lived in this tiny little room that was, the floor was covered with sawdust, blood, and beer bottles, because I would try to get drunk and like build a sled and like almost, cut myself pretty bad. So it was a pretty sketchy looking place. Like I would wear the same pants, for no exaggeration, a month without changing, and I wouldn't shower maybe but every other week. And in sobriety, that has changed drastically, because I was unemployed. I was unemployed for about 9 months, and I showered every day, I brushed my teeth every day, I showed up to, and because I had to go to meetings and I was involved in the process of Alcoholics Anonymous, and going to committed meetings, and even though, and the thing that my sponsor kind of pointed out the most was that it wasn't my job to go to meetings and whine about how I was unemployed, but kind of try to help other people who may be in the same situation or see how my experience could benefit another alcoholic. So I went through that, that phase of being unemployed for about 9 months, and I got a couple little part-time work here and there, and I finally have this job that I have today, and I've been working at for almost a year now, and I've done a lot better in sobriety at work too, because I've gotten a lot better at being able to shut my mouth, doing a 10th step and things like that, and trying to make things right. My first job in sobriety, it was funny, because I had, as I was saying before, my boss had come to me and said, this is not working out, like what's going on? And that's when I was holding back on, my fourth and fifth step. And then, 6 months later when I had my review, he's just like, you're a totally different person. Like, I'm not even like exaggerating, that's kind of what he literally said that. Like, so that's what, what having, believing in a higher power and trying to help others does for me. I ended up having to make amends to somebody and that I worked with. It was this woman that I worked with that our personalities kind of didn't work well together, and that's, I learned a lot in that amends situation, because when me and my boss at this point had come to a point where, this is another one of those things in interviews I put a real good spin on this one, but this is the real story behind it, how I ended up leaving this job. We had a kind of a difference of opinion, both our toes got stepped on, so I I decided I was going to quit. But what had happened was is that this woman that I worked with, because I didn't get along with her too well, she cried, and she thought that, you know, it was because of her that I was quitting. And, you know, I was just like, no, it's not because of you. It's has something to do with me. I take things way too far, and I apologize that, you know, some of the things that you may have done, I've gotten mad about, are not things that you've done. It's things that I just take in my head and I run with it, and it's just, it has nothing to do with, you know, you as to why I'm leaving. And I remember she said, and at one point I kind of made a joke and I said, don't even give yourself that much credit. You couldn't make me do anything anyway. And she laughed at that, because I said it in a joking way. But then I kind of saw how the immense process, it wasn't about me feeling better, it was about the other person. It was about trying to lift that burden from her to make her not feel like it. This had nothing to do with her. This was my fault. And we left on very good terms. And so the one thing I'll kind of say is to the difference between my life when I was drinking and when I wasn't doing the steps is, you know, I'm the guy that, you know, I almost got fired from a 4-month internship. I can't in sobriety when I wasn't doing the steps and I was just trying to do it my own way. You know, things at work were going real terribly. Now that I've done the steps and try to carry a message to this new job I've had, within the year that I've been there, I've been promoted once, and there's a good chance I'm going to get promoted again. So that's the difference. That's just the night and day difference, because that I need to change everything if I'm going to overcome drinking. And so that's about all I have. Thanks.